Good afternoon, everyone. Today is April 19th. It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Seems an excellent time to convene a meeting of the Transportation and Economic Development Subcommittee of Ways and Means. We are going to be meeting today for a public hearing on House Bill 5025. Senator Johnson would normally be chairing today, and she will be with us in just a couple of minutes, but being cognizant of everybody's time, we decided to jump right in. So I'm going to go ahead and open the public hearing on House Bill 5025. Mr. Bender, you want to tell us where we're at as we begin phase two?
I'd be happy to, Mr. Co-Chair. This is the start of phase two of your session, where you come back, where you ask particular agencies to come back and provide additional details on specified items related to their budget prior to scheduling any work sessions on those budgets. Phase two is beginning with the Oregon Business Development Department. They're scheduled to be here 2 days, today and tomorrow. Just notification to members and to OBDD that we do expect that tomorrow's meeting will need to conclude at 3 o'clock for House Business. Oh, two o'clock, I'm sorry, for House Business, meaning that there'll only be a 1 hour available tomorrow. It sounds like that shouldn't be a problem, but in terms of getting through the material, but I just wanted to let you know. Today, there isn't that restriction on time. But OBDD is being asked to speak today about and provide more information on the Oregon Innovation Council program. This is a program that is funded through their budget and is funds specific economic development initiatives that are identified by the Oregon Innovation Council. I did provide a little bit of background here. If you click on your meeting materials at the item that says LFO Oregon Inc., this provides some history of programs that have been funded through the Oregon Inc. program for the past four biennia, and the governor's recommendation for 2015-17. Which doesn't look like the distributions for earlier biennia, because the funding distribution model under Oregon Inc. is proposed to be changed. So there'll be some discussion today of what's changing with Oregon Inc. and their funding. The other item today is a report on a Secretary of State audit of the department's incentive and loan programs. During phase one, we typically ask agencies to report on audits that have been issued related to their activities. And there wasn't enough time to get to that during OBDD's phase one. So as part of that regular process, they will be coming back and reporting today here in phase two.
Thank you, Mr. Bender. Colleagues, I apologize for being a little bit late. Are your remarks concluded?
Yeah.
Cool.
And we have opened the hearing.
Cool. Thank you. All right. We'll now call forward the Oregon Innovation Council, led by the delegation led by Mr. Harder, and you can set up the batting order any way you choose.
Thank you.
Madam Co-Chair, as they're getting seated, I just wanted to mention, during the last campaign season, we get phone calls on a regular basis from people who are polling for attitudes about different candidates. And I got a call one night, and the woman was working her way through this lengthy survey about a statewide race. And she said, would you be more or less inclined to vote for a candidate who had served on the Oregon Invasion Council? I said, the Oregon Invasion Council?
Okay.
What is the Oregon Invasion Council?
I see a task force looming in our future.
So I look forward to hearing more about who we're planning to invade.
Okay. Thank you. And just for the record, before the Invasion Council starts, in the interest of full disclosure, I actually serve on the audit committee for Oregon Inc. and serve ex officio on the commission. So, Mr. Harder, welcome.
Welcome, Thor. Thank you for having us. Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, committee members, thank you for having us back here today to dive into a couple more programs, as Mr. Bender mentioned. Specifically, we'd like to provide additional detail on three topics, both today and tomorrow. As we've already discussed, the Oregon Innovation Council, not Invasion Council, Innovation Council, the Secretary of State's audit on state business incentives and loans, and then tomorrow it will be regional solutions. In several cases, we're going to have key partners come up and present, and that will be the case today as it relates to Oregon Inc. So the first topic, pretty obvious, is we're going to present on the Oregon Innovation Council. Just as a quick reminder from our Phase 1 presentation, how Business Oregon approaches economic development is pretty broad and deep. So it includes rural community development, infrastructure financing, business retention, expansion, and recruitment. It also includes investments in industry innovation that we'll talk about today, as well as supporting small businesses. Fostering small business growth and encouraging industry research and development are core components of our economic development strategy, and I think a lot of people would believe are core elements of our long-term competitiveness as a state. Innovation and entrepreneurship are also important to our work in both rural and urban communities. While state investments in innovation and entrepreneurship are not new, a coordinated strategy within Business Oregon is relatively new. It's only during the current biennium where we've had, where we've provided structure, staff, and strategy to build out this body of work. We've made significant progress, but I think there's still much more to do. Our goal at Business Oregon with regards to innovation and entrepreneurship is to excel at three things, and this, and the slide on the screen should help capture these. The first is industry innovation, which is led by the Oregon Innovation Council, as well as the newly formed Oregon Manufacturing Innovation Center. The second is access to capital with oversight and strategic direction from the Oregon Growth Board. And the third is statewide support for small business growth, where we take a partnership model alongside our small business development centers, higher education, and local communities to encourage entrepreneurship in rural areas of our state. Today's presentation is focused on the state's investments in industry innovation, so the left-hand column on the screen, which is centered around the work of the Oregon Innovation Council. Little back history here. The Oregon Innovation Council is led by a 20-member board consisting of industry leaders, university representatives, business executives, investors, and legislators. As Senator Johnson mentioned, both our co-chairs today are members of the Oregon Inc. board. In 2007, when Oregon Inc. was first funded by the legislature, its mission was to commercialize emerging technologies born out of science and research. It was an acknowledgement that innovation was an important component of Oregon's long-term competitiveness. And last session, the legislature confirmed this priority by including Oregon Inc. in Business Oregon's base budget, creating the opportunity for greater strategic alignment. After 10 years, the innovation landscape in Oregon looks significantly different than it did in 2007. The increasingly important role of university research, the rise of business accelerators and incubators, and the breakdown of what we often look at as our traditional industry silos have contributed to a very different environment for commercializing technologies now than in 2007.
And Mr. Harder, as you say that landscape changes and some of those initiatives that you mentioned are beneficiaries of public funds, what are the metrics that you use to decide whether or not there is performance? Is it strictly a jobs-based return on investment, or is it angel investor infusion of capital? What are the metrics?
I have a slide coming up that will touch on some of these metrics. Jobs are certainly a factor that we look at. Attraction of outside capital. So a lot of the industries and companies that we're working with through the Oregon Inc. model rely on investments to grow. And then recently we added revenue or sales. So we want healthy, growing companies. Individual, that's on a broad scale. On an individual investment purpose, we may have additional criteria that we look at, and we can get into that later in the presentation.
One of the other things that we've talked about over time, and recognizing that we have some new members to the Ways and Means process as well as new members to the body, was stickiness to Oregon, where in the past there have been investments in companies that were spurred by Oregon investment. And what was the anchor to keep them in Oregon? We've lost one that was a huge venture capital investment, and it vaporized down to Silicon Valley, and I don't hold that against them, but the wind under that company's wings was Oregon money. Mm-hmm. Talk about the stickiness a little bit, if you would.
I would say the stickiness is enhanced when we invest in Oregon industries that we have a competitive advantage in. So where we can grow and develop emerging technologies and industries where we're seen as a leader, those businesses want to stay in Oregon versus jump down to another state. I also think the stickiness comes in around how we can provide capital, and we'll get into some of that. Where you sometimes see companies leave is where they can access capital easier. Now, I think the landscape has changed a bit. More investors are interested in investing in Oregon companies than in the past. I think they see our companies, our talent, as strengths for us. So it's sometimes less of an issue than maybe historically. So that's certainly a positive. But it is something if we're a leader in outdoor athletic gear and materials and apparel, and we have advanced materials for that industry, they want to be in Oregon because we're the Silicon Valley of that industry globally. So I think that's why it's important that we base investments around our target industries.
Thank you.
So as referenced, innovation changes. The world of innovation has changed. So over the last 2 years, Oregon Inc. has acknowledged this change and sought to evaluate its approach in this new era. To inform decision-making, Oregon Inc. developed the Oregon Innovation Plan. I believe you have a copy of that in your files. That's based on market research and emerging trends. The result is a new model that we believe will increase efficiencies and incent competition to ensure the greatest impact for state innovation dollars invested. The remaining of this presentation will focus on this new model endorsed by the Oregon Inc. Board earlier in the year, and then obviously included in the governor's request budget. Some background before we jump into that approach is it's important to note that Oregon Inc. is a success. Since 2007, Oregon Inc.'s signature research centers, who you will hear from representatives from later today, and industry initiatives such as Drive Oregon have supported approximately 190 early stage companies. Those companies have gone on to generate $630 million in outside capital back into the state, whether that's private or federal. So these are getting into some of the metrics we look at. And in addition, 400 firms have accessed vital shared labs through our signature research centers and their partnership with our Oregon's research universities. A little bit more on the metrics. At the 10-year mark, previous investments in Oregon Inc. are starting to pay off. So in the last four-year period, there were approximately 376 jobs created or retained through Oregon Inc. investments. Last year alone, that number was 326. So Oregon Inc. created or retained almost as many jobs in the last year than the four previous years combined. What this really illustrates and the point of why we make investments in innovation is that long-term returns on innovation, and there are long-term returns when you invest in innovation, and there's a multiplier effect. When you're working with early stage companies or you're working with emerging technologies, job created from day one isn't necessarily your best metric. The average wage for an Oregon Inc. job is approximately $80,000 a year, significantly higher than median wages in this state, even in our urban metro areas. And it's worth noting that these numbers are verified. So we do not allow initiatives to self-report. We verify with our employment department, and we do not include indirect jobs. These are direct jobs created. A similar story can be told regarding follow-on funding. So this is outside capital coming into the state that probably wouldn't have come if we didn't have the companies or the research and development occurring. It is also picking up. A new metric introduced in 2016 for Oregon Inc. was participant company revenue or sales. And in fiscal year 2016, Oregon Inc. companies earned approximately $24 million in revenue, which is impressive considering that most companies who engage with Oregon Inc. are pre-revenue when they start. For comparison purposes going forward, I just wanted to present a slide of our current 15-17 budget allocation. So this is our current funding model for Oregon Inc. And we can come back to this if needed.
Actually, I'd like to stop right here. So the Signature Research Centers are on for 13.9.
Currently. That's currently.
Currently. Yeah. Okay. I've answered my own question. Yep. Thank you.
This... So compared to the 15-17 budget, the 2017-19 Oregon Inc. proposed budget features four distinct but highly dependent investment areas that total $17.7 million in the governor's request budget. This includes $7.5 million for existing Signature Research Centers to provide baseline funding to help identify, mentor, and build the pipeline of early-stage companies. It includes $5 million to capitalize a standalone commercialization fund to streamline investments and improve accessibility to capital, as well as to achieve an accredited status. And this last point is significant, and we'll touch on it later in the presentation.
Mr. Harder, mm-hmm. How is your commercialization fund going to distinguish itself from the Oregon Growth Fund or any of the other funds that are making investments? And what are the possibilities that some enterprise could run among them and end up seeking multiple lines of funding?
Mm-hmm. Oregon Growth Board, obviously a key role in how we provide access to capital, makes investments in funds. So the Oregon Growth Board does not make investments into individual companies. So it's so if you split the Oregon Growth Board out into the growth account, that is a mechanism to return money back to the state for education purposes. The Oregon Growth Fund does more social impact investing around small businesses in many of our rural parts of the state. But again, as the Oregon Growth Board puts money into funds that do these, or angel conferences, or CDFIs that do this work. The commercialization fund, when the fund manager is selected, would make direct investments into companies that are based out of technologies commercialized in many cases out of our universities. There's often a different funding mechanism for very technology intensive startups than there are for your average small business growth startups. Different forms, different strategies for how you invest in those types of companies.
Senator Hansel.
Mr. Harder, I noticed that it's pretty close to 50%, a little less than 50%, but you're reducing the investments in the Signature Research Centers mm-hmm. from the previous biennium to this one. What kind of looked like they were doing pretty well. Is it they reach a point where they don't need as much money, or could you explain that a little bit?
So we can go. Some of this is based on the kind of changing nature how we make investments in innovation. The $7.5 million for Signature Research Centers is meant to provide them a baseline for operating support. In two cases, it's a slight decrease in operating support for them, and in one case, it's a significant increase in operating support for the Signature Research Center. Previously, when we made investments, we would give the elements that we have pulled out to be more standalone. The commercialization fund, for example, were embedded within Signature Research Centers. We have pulled that out for one reason is to create a single standalone fund at $5 million, and that's so it can be accredited by the Securities and Exchange Commission, which allows them to take market rate equity positions. Previously, they had to take, I don't know if they're looking to Heather, what they would call charity equity positions, which means the state doesn't get the full benefit of the return. So that was one reason. That's why I mentioned that accredited piece of it earlier. So we kind of pulled that from without of the Signature Research Center for a purpose there.
Sounds like it's a good move. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Mr. Harder,
yep.
Let me just ask you, in the making those equity investments, does that then assume that the state of Oregon would have an equity share?
Yes.
Okay.
And the long-term strategy for this commercialization fund, these are early-stage companies, and there's risk involved in this. But if returns come back in, it would go back into the fund. And I think a long-term goal is for it to be a sustainable, or what they call an evergreen fund.
I go back a long, long ways with this whole process. And one of the criticisms, and I'm looking at a big ding out of this dais that Kurt Schrader put here banging a gavel one early morning in Ways and Means, so I'm sort of channeling Schrader right now. How would you react to the criticism that the state should not be in the position of picking winners and losers, that they would invest in Hansel Inc. but not Monroe Inc.? How will you sort the criteria to make sure that there's equitable access to the opportunity?
If it's specific to the fund, I do want to make it very clear that this would not be funding decisions would not be made by the state Business Oregon. It would have representation from the Oregon Inc. board, and we would go out and hire a professional fund manager whose job it is to make investments. I think to answer the question about targeting is a strategy we use in economic development when you have limited resources. We do it on how we approach retention, expansion, recruitment. We do it when we approach regional characteristics. So when we go into regions, we're going to want to grow or attract certain companies that fit that region. We also do it around innovation, where we think we have the best competitive advantage to grow our economy. So it is an approach we use under a limited resource scenario.
Thank you.
So finally, we do the final, 4.2 million is earmarked for high impact opportunity projects. So this is an approach that creates a more timely, competitive process for selecting statewide innovation investments. And these are investments that aren't going to a company, but are going to a partnership to promote research and development. And the investments will go to focus on things like purchasing equipment, funding prototyping or testing, or research. It is not meant to go for ongoing operations of an organization. And finally, there's $1 million allocated for the establishment of a permanent small business innovation research, small business technology transfer, matching grant program. That is a federal program that we match to attract and leverage federal research awards. That's the high level overview. I'd like to now turn it over to Heather Stafford, who's going to walk through each of these four elements of Oregon Inc. In a bit more detail.
Let me just ask you this, and this is where you take out your crystal ball that's the other parts of your duties not assigned, and ask you to be a seer into the future. What indications are you getting about federal support for projects that we historically have relied on here in Oregon? OMEP, the Oregon Manufacturing Extension Partnership, some of the other programs that fit in that SBIR bucket. Do you have any inkling of where the federal government is going to go?
Not really, but I'm concerned.
I mean, it's an honest answer.
Yeah. I think we've seen federal administration budgets presented. We've seen kind of conversations that have gone on about cutting back many of the federal programs that we rely on, the Economic Development Administration, I believe the Small Business Administration, our export work, our arts and cultural division within the agency relies on NEA funding, and we obviously rely on it for innovation work. There doesn't seem to be a very clear answer to what that funding will look like, but we are engaged with our folks who monitor that, the federal government, and are participating in sharing information with what I would call industry or economic development organizations to make the case for the importance of these resources.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Ms. Stafford.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson and Gomberg, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Heather Stafford. I'm the Innovation and Entrepreneurship Manager at Business Oregon. And I'd like to provide more detail on each of the four Oregon Inc. investment areas that Director Harder overviewed for you. They're managed separately by the Oregon Innovation Council and Business Oregon staff, but are highly interdependent. The Oregon Inc. 2.0 model preserves some of the core assets, capabilities, and expertise developed over the past decade while finding efficiencies with the structure. We have three signature research centers in Oregon statute. They are Oregon Best, with an emphasis on clean tech and sustainable technologies, Otrati, with an emphasis on bioscience and digital health, and Onami, with an emphasis on advanced materials, nanoscience, and microtechnologies. Under the previous model, these nonprofit organizations have received broad operations funding from the state since 2007, and their work has been vital to the success of Oregon Inc. over the past decade. Through extensive strategic planning work, thank you, Senator Johnson. Through extensive strategic planning work, the council identified core expertise that must continue to be supported in order to keep the momentum and positive impact of this commercialization work. The shift this biennium compared to previous biennium is a more allocated model for signature research funding, where Oregon Inc. funds the specific innovation support services that have yielded targeted impacts on jobs, follow-on funding, and company revenue growth, the three primary metrics that Director Harder overviewed. The signature research centers have created these results in the following ways. They work to build the pipeline of promising science-based companies. They work with universities, inventors, with industry, and with investors very closely, helping companies access federal and private capital. They work with university research teams to discover new technology with the potential for commercial viability. They assist companies with prototyping and testing new technologies. They do this through mentoring, small amounts of funding, and also supporting access to shared labs, providing market research and business development as well. And they support companies who to give them a path toward market viability and also give them a strong executive team, sometimes even forming a founding team around a promising technology. Our updated model has a centralized commercialization fund that provides patient capital investments directly to Oregon science-based companies. And this is not new money, as Director Harder overviewed. These funds were previously managed by two of the three signature research centers, as they recognized early on that capital was necessary in order to take these world-changing technologies to market. And to answer Senator Johnson's question about the uniqueness of this funding compared to other funding sources, this really does fill a gap for the types of manufacturing companies that the private capital market has essentially failed. They have a big gap in lack of capital, and so the state recognized this early on, and this funding was always meant to fill that gap. At $5 million in assets, the Oregon Inc. Commercialization Fund achieves accredited investor status, the Securities and Exchange Commission's exemption to allow us to make securities exchanges. With this status, Oregon Inc.'s Commercialization Fund now can make market rate investments in early stage companies to help them grow and stay here in Oregon.
Ms. Stafford, I want to probe this a little bit further. You're using an awful lot of kind of nomenclature that is unique to the industry. I want you to turn it into English.
Sure.
You guys are going to be making investments based on some kind of criteria, retaining equity for the state of Oregon. How is this not duplicative of I heard Mr. Harder's response. I obviously didn't understand it. But how is this not duplicative of what the Oregon Growth folks are doing, and why should you be managing a $5 million portfolio when we have massive apparatus in place to invest state assets? What expertise would you have versus putting this $5 million in with the Oregon Investment Council? I'm just trying to understand why we're peeling off $5 million to have managed separate and distinct from other investment vehicles in the state.
Senator, let me answer that real quick. So Oregon, the Oregon Growth Board invests in funds. This commercialization fund would invest directly into companies. So that's one distinction there. So
let me just stop you there. The last time that we invested in companies, mm-hmm. the portfolio performance was awful. And it's just now, after a decade, starting to, I think, show some, it was a negative return for a mm-hmm. while. What's the prophylactic against you guys finding yourself in exactly the same situation?
So, yeah, I'll get to answer. I'll answer that question. So one is just one's a invest in funds. The other one is this commercialization funds directly into companies. The second is the types of companies that are come out of our Oregon Inc. Initiative or who work with signature research centers are very hard to capitalize companies that the traditional venture capital market doesn't normally invest in. They have very long research and development terms. Most venture capital goes directly into software. These are things like bioscience, manufacturing, and different things. So they do just have a different investment profile. The third is this isn't the state of Oregon investing in these companies. This would be us identifying through a competitive RFP process an experienced and professional fund manager to make these investments. These investments were already occurring through Oregon Inc. Process under Oregon Best and Onami. We're pulling it out to create the $5 million threshold because before they were separated and neither of them got to five, and now we can do accredited investing, which is a better return for the state.
Thank you. I'm sorry you had to do that times.
I'm sorry I had to,
So to continue, the target companies who might apply for this are early stage inventors, founders, university spinouts, companies associated with very early stage emerging technology research. And often they develop out of one of Oregon's research universities. And they're almost always pre-revenue, and they have a very long commercialization cycle, 8 to 10 years often. The commercialization fund will prioritize those types of companies who have a strong team for business development established, a product that has a strong market potential, who make an impact in one of Oregon's competitive industries, and also who are committed to growing in Oregon. And much of this due diligence and development of these companies is handled currently and will be in the future by the signature research centers. The fund will also seek to earn a clear and measurable rate of return internal so that it can sustain itself.
You're going to see examples of these companies when the signature research centers come up, and I think many of them will be names that you recognize that were seeded many, many years ago. So it's part of the innovation process for us.
So the third investment area for Oregon Inc. is the high-impact opportunity projects. They take the place of industry initiatives like Oregon Wave Energy Trust, SOAR, and Drive Oregon, funded in past biennia. The way industry cluster work has been done in the past has provided funding for new nonprofit organizations to coordinate broad industry initiatives, investments, or project work. For 2017-19, the council is recommending a more timely and precise model for this funding. Projects will be selected by the council in a competitive process every biennium where high-impact opportunity project would yield measurable results and increase Oregon's competitive advantage in a given industry. Potential projects would be evaluated by financial leverage, whether it's local, private, or federal, the strength of the established public-private partnership that's applying, the nature of the innovative technology solution being applied to that industry, and the extent of a clear and measurable return on investment for the state.
What will be the role of the heads of the signature research centers in either explaining or advocating or promoting? Will they be included in the consultation? Because I would assume, I'm just looking at Dr. Fox, I'm assuming that she is on the cutting edge of what's happening in the portfolio under her research center. Talk about how that relationship will emerge.
I would expect existing signature research centers to competitively apply for this pot of money, as well as I think it's also open for non-signature research center projects. The important part for this funding is that it's project-based versus ongoing operational organization-based. So it's the last bullet up there, not for ongoing operating funds. It's to help whether it's a signature research center or some other partnership purchase equipment, do prototyping, testing, market research, those types of things. So I think they are very much positioned to be participating in this pot.
Okay. Ms. Stafford, in order to give the Signature Research Centers ample opportunity to talk, even though I told you to slow down, I'm now going to ask you to sprint to the finish.
I'm to my last slide, so we're good on time. The last thing I'd like to present to you all is the Small Business Innovation Research, or SBIR, and the Small Business Technology Transfer, or STTR, support programs. They provide small grants to help inventors or small companies prepare applications for competitive federal awards. Our Phase 00 program supports companies with grant writing and review for their federal applications. The Phase 1 matching program makes funding available to match a successful Phase 1 federal award, which can be up to $150,000 for the company. And our Phase 2 matching program makes funding available to match a successful Phase 2 federal award, and those can be up to $1.5 million for the company. This program has been successfully piloted by Business Oregon over the past biennium and has generated a 40-to-1 leverage for federal dollars to state dollars invested in this. The 2015 Innovation Index identified that Oregon ranks 11th in the country for successful SBIR awards, and that represents nearly $45 million a year in federal applied research dollars coming into our state.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, any questions of either Mr. Harder or Ms. Stafford? Okay. Whoops. Representative Bruton.
That's such a naive question. I just probably shouldn't even ask it. But, you know, we've heard so many amazing numbers about the amount of leverage we get and so forth. So some of it just came from presentations, hearing about other budgets where they're being just slashed to the bone and people are going hungry and not getting medical service and all kinds of things. Is there any way to take all the stuff that you do, which I totally support, and just say for this investment in our state dollars, what's the total return?
That's a great question, Representative Reardon, members of the committee. We don't have that right off the top. I mean, we know that there's for follow-on funding a 6-to-1 leverage and the leverage markers for the SBIR program and individually, but we're happy to pull that together for you. Absolutely.
That'd be really helpful.
If you'd get it to the professional staff and they can disseminate it to the whole committee, that'd be great.
Will do.
All right. We're going to ask this panel to replace itself. I'm happy to keep the Chief Financial Officer's office there. Okay, if you'll step back, we'll ask Mr. Kenny, Mr. Rung, and Dr. Fox to come forward. And you can pick your own batting order.
Well, good morning, Senator Johnson, Representative Gonberg, members of the committee. I think I'm going first because I'm the oldest. Anyway, that's what we decided. So ONAMI is pleased to be back in front of you to tell you what we've done and to talk about where we're going.
We have identified you as the oldest. We have not associated a name with your chronology.
Skip Rung, President and Executive Director of ONAMI.
Thank you. Please.
So there are four key points that I'd like to summarize, and then I'll support them briefly. First of all, ONAMI pioneered a proven and lean, by which we mean we don't actually employ researchers, we don't own equipment, we don't own buildings. The budgets we've had don't support that, and it wasn't necessary. But a lean SRC model that's recognized nationwide, we're arguably one of the best in the nation at commercializing research, perhaps the best. We've been honored for that. We are and have been for some time 100% focused on Oregon science-based startup success. And that has driven the details of both our current biennium program and the future program that we anticipate or are hoping to perform in the coming biennium. Once again, we are on track to meet or exceed all goals. And I'll show you the three required metrics, jobs, leverage investment, and revenue for portfolio companies. And then finally, in keeping with what we're calling the Oregon Inc. 2.0 model, in which we will no longer have a gap fund, which is being replaced by the commercialization fund, we have a new commercialization model that's pretty experimental, but we're quite excited about it, and we'll give you just a glimpse of how that's going to work. First of all, we were honored by the State Science and Technology Institute in 2012 as the best in the United States for commercializing research at a professional organization for tech-based economic development. Based on our work, I was appointed to the National Science Foundation SBIR STTR Advisory Committee, a position I've served in for 5 years. More than two-thirds of our companies have gotten SBIRs, most of those from the National Science Foundation. It is a fabulous federal program. Our program is carefully, strategically laid out to follow the innovation program. There isn't time today to go through the details of it. It's on our website and in other materials. But everything we've done, you know, has been according to a strategy, and it led to the delivery on the metrics that we have. So far this biennium, we were asked to create 30 new jobs in the portfolio companies. The answer so far after 6 quarters to date is 58. The companies were to achieve $14.9 million in revenue. They've already achieved 12.5. That is going to be exceeded as well. And then we're way ahead of our leverage capital investment in companies, and I'm going to give you a couple examples as we go. So that's going well again. A busy slide, but this is our portfolio of active companies. Altogether, including the company that got away to California, they've raised over $350 million, but more than $200 million of it came to and stayed in Oregon.
Before you move away from that slide, what is your methodology for remaining connected to those companies? Some of them are not going to succeed. Some of them are going to be wildly successful. How do you keep them within your gravitational pull once there's no fiscal connection?
Okay, great question, Senator Johnson. We are very intensively involved with our companies, beginning with the fact that when we make an award, a grant, we don't give it all at once. We give it in tranches, and we do stop projects that aren't performing. We have entrepreneurs and residents, you know, that still follow companies after 5 years, help them raise capital, help them find key talent. I do this myself. We have supplied graduate student internships, about 15 so far, to these companies. They ask us for help all the time. I got a couple of email messages yesterday about where can I find backup TEM support in Portland. And so we use our network, and we have some leverage. We also have investment holdings in these companies. So we are very, very actively involved. We had a major multinational company, corporate investor in our building yesterday. We put two of our companies in front of them. That was a very good meeting, lots and lots of ways.
When you say you have investment stakes, you all are organized as, I mean, the industry initiatives are 501c3s.
That's correct.
You are 501c3.
Yes.
So the 501c3 is able to hold equity positions in some of these companies?
Yes, we are.
Okay. And of the portfolio of companies, how many of them have failed? How many of them are still in some level of success along a spectrum?
Of about 48 companies, about 35 are still around and viable. Some of them never got off the ground. Most of those are doing fairly well, and we've actually seen an increase in valuation and some cash return on two or three of them.
Of that delta, what's been left on the table? How much money?
We have put out about $9 million in committed gap funds. That's actually the next slide. And so far, I'd have to go back and get you some numbers. You know, we've gotten cash returns of a little less than $1 million in holdings, you know, in most of the companies, by far the majority have not cashed out.
One last question. Do you or any of your board members sit on the boards of these companies?
Our EIRs.
For acronyms for the record, please.
Our entrepreneurs and residents often do. I do not.
Okay. Representative Meek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Quick question about a lot of science, and my guess are that there are probably some patents being awarded. Is any of our programs participatory in any nature that maybe we're helping these folks innovate and develop these, you know, great new technologies, but are we missing the boat of participating with some of their success through the seed money?
Okay. Representative Meek and members of the committee, yes, we do that. One of the means of return we have is a share of intellectual property earnings from the university. If we do not take an equity position in a company, if we take a position in a company, that's kind of included, you know, in the value. We do not ourselves take title to intellectual property, however.
Please continue.
All right. So this is a graph that shows the progress, and there are a couple of points to be made. First of all, the gap fund that Onami started was in 2006. You didn't start to see returns until about 2010, and since then they've been steady and upward. So to Director Harder's point, it takes a little while for these things to get going, but then they do establish some momentum. And then just a couple of fun stories about two Oregon companies that I think are very excited that are creating jobs rapidly. The little robot you see on the left is from Agility Robotics, our most recent Gap Fund company. They now occupy, you know, several thousand square feet in a beautiful building on the riverfront in Albany. They are hiring lots of people. They absolutely intend to stay in Oregon. They've raised venture capital already. And I think are going to be a fantastic success. People have seen news about that technology. It's a big one, we think.
What does it do?
It makes robots that are revolutionary in terms of their energy efficiency by copying animal motion rather than copying human body plans. It turns out to be a fairly poor way to make robots.
What's the application? Is it going to bring me a beer when I get home at 5? What's it do?
Perhaps. Their application would be safety, going places where humans can't go, and also there's a lot of talk, there's even a Google patent about the last 100 feet of delivery where drones can't go. So there are all kinds of applications. Right now, the company has received a great deal of DARPA funding, so there's a huge amount of federal interest. But that's somewhat of an open space, what's going to be done. The next one, in somewhat unexciting letters, is Shoei Chemical. This is actually a case where it wasn't university technology mostly. It was a Beaverton startup that sold technology to a Japanese chemical company that then went on to make its first foreign direct investment in the United States. They have had about 20 people, 10 Japanese expats, 10 U.S. They've sent the Japanese expat home, and they are hiring Americans in their place, and they're operating in three times the space they had before, having spent many millions of dollars on new facilities on the Hewlett-Packard campus. A really nice story. They make, by the way, you didn't ask, they make semiconductor nanoparticles for use in optical displays and lighting. Second to last, is where we're going, and that is a model that is even more capital light than what we've done before. We're going to go back upstream, work with inventors and the universities, and actually form the companies ourselves rather than wait for them to form. And that is, we're going to identify innovations at the very early stages and then put them through a process that helps us determine whether there is an opportunity for a successful Oregon company. This is the way that we're going to prepare companies to apply to the new commercialization form fund. And then final thing, and we're going to roll this out on Saturday, but in order to build our pipeline of inventors and entrepreneurs across the state, we're going to roll out a statewide webinar series that trains people, you know, in what scientists need to know if they wish to become entrepreneurs. And that starts with basic marketing principles, intellectual property, building a strong execution team, and then funding your company. We're experts in these fields, and we're going to share that expertise with companies and entrepreneurs statewide. And I hope I haven't exceeded my time too greatly.
You haven't. You got 7 minutes still on the...
Okay, well, I think David gets...
Okay.
All right. My name is David Kenny. I'm the executive director and president of Oregon Best, and I'm up next. And I'm pleased to be here. Senator Johnson, Representative Gomberg, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to share some information with you all about Oregon Best, our recent work, and our plans for the future. I wanted to highlight our scope, as was mentioned earlier, is around clean tech. And that word is sometimes, I get some baffled looks from folks, and so I want to talk a little bit about what is clean tech. Briefly, these are technologies that are addressing challenges that we face as a planet around the environment. And so we say technologies that are good for the planet. Often they're associated with using less resources or allowing us to do more with less. The obvious ones for a lot of people are things like renewable energy, but they don't necessarily think of things that make agriculture more efficient or manufacturing more efficient as clean tech.
Let me ask, though, in looking at this little brochure that you passed out, how it is that you're able to drive in your own lane? It seems that we've got an awful lot of spillover. You're doing some marine applications. So is the Oregon Wave Energy Trust up until now going to fly out of Oregon Inc. You're doing energy efficiency. Lots of others are. You're doing transportation. You're doing ag. You're doing... How do you build a core expertise when you're sort of all things to all people? What ties these together other than the rubric clean tech?
Well, the things that tie them together, one is the focus, you know, as when you're talking about the other organizations, we're focused specifically on helping a company commercialize a technology. OET, for example, was focused on putting the infrastructure in place for the state, engaging with stakeholders, territorial sea plan, you know, working with the folks to create the ability for companies like ones that we work with to be successful. We're actually working with a specific company trying to help advance their technology. As far as the breadth...
But let me stop you. I'm looking at NACA fermentation. The state's made an investment in that set of activities, whether it's cheese or beer. So is this company accessing money and support from you as well as university? I mean, how many of these companies in your very broad portfolio are multiple dippers in sets in sources of state funds?
I don't know the exact number. I think there are some that have benefited by working with both Onami and Oregon Best in a few cases. I don't know of many that have received funding from other Oregon Inc. initiatives. They may be engaged or a member of,
not but necessarily not Oregon not Inc. Funding. The fermentation funds didn't come through Oregon Inc. I'm just trying to figure out, and maybe you would be kind enough to do this just for the companies in your little brochure, is to list sources of public support for each of them.
Sure.
I know some of them have gotten significant venture capital, and some of them are powerhouse companies standing on their own. I'm thinking of D.R. Johnson. But I'm just curious how many of them are, I don't mean to use this in a disparaging sense, but frequent flyers through public sources of money.
Yeah, I think you'll find that, I don't know that any of them I would describe as frequent flyers through public money. There may be some that have tapped into other resources. We're always focused on a specific objective and are usually familiar with other programs they're trying to tap into and try to ensure that that we're not doing anything that's redundant. That's our primary focus, is to ensure that we're not creating redundancies.
I'm still really struggling with that redundancies, because M3 Wave Energy, we have a request hunting in this session for an investment in the testing center in Newport. How are you not duplicating or getting in their way, or is this complementary? How do you keep the lines of communication open so that Dr. Batten and your company aren't crashing into each other?
Well, I think Dr. Batten is trying to create a testing infrastructure for companies from all over the world to come and test their devices. It's a unique unique program that they have to allow companies to test in a grid-connected wave energy environment. That those will be companies, most of whom, you know, will not be from Oregon, probably, I would expect. But they're building tremendous infrastructure to support that. And there are a number of Oregon companies that are developing wave energy devices. One of them is M3 Wave, and we've been focused with them on how do they develop the specific technology of their product. They will benefit from having access to a wave energy testing facility right on the coast here in Oregon. We're familiar with, have engaged with, and have talked with NIMREC for years since they, you know, first started applying for federal funds for that test center. And I'd say everything we've done, I would describe as complementary. The other question you asked about the breadth, you know, the other thing that ties a lot of these together is the ultimate investment opportunities for these companies. There are only there are fairly targeted types of investors that will invest in clean technology companies. And so while it looks like we're covering a lot of industries here, a lot of the investors are actually fairly common across them. And there's a theme that I would say ties a lot of these together around that. There was a time when a lot of venture capitalists rushed into clean tech, didn't really know what they were doing, and a lot of them lost money. And there are a smaller number of VCs still continuing to invest in this who understand the markets, understand the challenges that are unique to these kinds of companies. So that would be another thing I would highlight. But I did want to highlight the fact that clean tech is very well aligned with existing Oregon industries, including agriculture and natural resources and manufacturing, as well as some of the urban scale technologies that have become more popular and we've developed expertise in our tech centers. We have both research and professional expertise in these areas, and our reputation as a state for sustainability aligns us well around policy and other things. some other clean tech takeaways. Clean technology, while you know, I think certain technologies you've heard from an investment perspective have come into favor or gone out of favor, as on the whole, there's been a 27x increase globally in clean technologies as measured by the Clean Tech Group out of California over the last 15 years. And in general, clean technology companies are more likely to create manufacturing jobs because the products that they make are often large-scale physical objects that need manufacturing, which for Oregon means we're creating a broader diversity of types of jobs in the workforce. This slide highlights many of the companies. I also handed out a brochure that has a lot of these companies in it and describes briefly what they do. We've provided funding and support to over 65 companies since our commercialization program began in 2011. Collectively, after $5.8 million in commercialization funding from Oregon Best, they've gone on to raise well over $50 million in follow-on funding from private and public sources, out-of-state public sources. And then one of the things I'm most excited about, in addition to attracting investment funding, just in the first six quarters of this biennium, they've generated $20 million in revenue from customers for products. Most of these companies, when we started working with them, didn't have a product, didn't have a customer, didn't have anything to sell yet. And they now are generating tens of millions of dollars from their products that they're selling to customers. And collectively, they're employing nearly 300 Oregonians. And the type of support we've been providing, we've talked a lot about the commercialization funding today. That funding always goes hand in hand with other types of support. Because of the expertise that we've developed, the relationships we've developed, we're able to provide connections to investors, support in connecting to the right SBIR program. The SBIR program is actually run out of 11 different federal agencies. Knowing which agency and how to apply for those funds is not easy, and we're able to help companies do that. We also provide mentoring. We have an accelerator program. We can provide university interns and manufacturing scale-up support, among other things. A few things just to highlight in terms of news. HM3 Energy is a company that's developed a torrefied biomass product. They had an event in which Senator Wyden helped them announce in October an investment they'd received from a Japanese investor who helped them build a $4 million facility in Troutdale, which has successfully demonstrated that their product works. And that company is now looking for sites both in Asia and in the Northwest to build biomass processing facilities, which could lead to rural jobs in Oregon. Another one, you mentioned D.R. Johnson. We provided some of the seed funding that helped convince them to be the first company in the United States to make a commitment to manufacturing cross-laminated timber. And their orders are growing, and they're actually starting to expand their manufacturing workforce.
Are we getting close?
Yep.
Okay.
In addition to the direct work with companies, we have done some initiative work, which I'd say falls into the Heather a little bit ago described the high impact opportunity projects. In particular, we have led a cross-laminated timber feasibility study funded by the Economic Development Administration and the U.S. Department of Commerce, which has been a project we've led with eight other organizations over the last 18 months, and we're about to release our report in the next few weeks, which highlights the opportunities for that technology in the Northwest. We've also been funded by Wells Fargo to do work looking around the ecosystem around Oregon and looking at, as was mentioned, there's been a lot of changes in the entrepreneur ecosystem, and we've been doing a needs assessment and helping to map some of those resources. In the spirit of innovating, with the Invasion Council, we've seen our footprint expand beyond Oregon. We've connected with the Incubate Energy Network, which is a U.S. Department of Energy-funded network of clean energy incubator programs, which has helped us to provide additional support to our companies where we're able to connect them to resources now in Boston, Colorado, Los Angeles, and other places, and that's been a tremendous support. I also have been appointed twice by the U.S. Secretary of Commerce to serve on the National Advisory Council on Innovation and Entrepreneurship, where we've been able to have an Oregon voice at the table representing the interests in trying to improve federal policy and programs around innovation and entrepreneurship.
Thank you. I want to leave enough time for Dr. Fox. Are you close?
Last slide, which is really to say for 2017 to 19, Our focus is to maintain momentum around clean tech as a high impact opportunity. We see it continuing to grow and the opportunity for Oregon continuing to grow. We'll continue to develop a pipeline of companies that will feed into this new commercialization fund that the state will be managing, as well as providing access to other types of capital for companies. And I'll leave it at that.
Thank
for
you.
Now. Yep.
Dr. Fox.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Gomberg and Johnson and members of the Ways and Means Joint Subcommittee. My name is Jennifer Fox. I'm the Executive Director of the Oregon Translational Research and Development Institute, OTRADI, and also the OTRADI Bioscience Incubator. Let me start by telling you a little bit about OTRADI. At OTRADI, we're mission-driven, and our mission is to fuel the economic development of Oregon's bioscience industry by translating innovative research into products and startups, incubating and launching these companies to benefit human health and wellness and create high-wage jobs in Oregon. We were created to help startup companies and university researchers find funding partners with the underlying goal of attracting, growing, and keeping bio companies here and jobs here in Oregon. It's because of your support that we're able to fulfill this critical role in Oregon's growing bioscience ecosystem. It's been amazing to participate in the growth of this sector in Oregon. Since just 2009, Oregon has experienced a 24% increase in bioscience jobs, and today nearly 14,000 Oregonians work directly in the bioscience sector. Women and minorities make up nearly 50% of this workforce, and workers are earning an average wage of $71,000, more than 50% above the state average wage. All indications point to these numbers growing. OTRADI helps to translate bioscience research into health and wellness products and businesses. And since our inception, we have leveraged the $12.4 million in state funding since 2007 into more than $150 million of private and federal funding for companies and researchers in Oregon. Since our inception, we've worked with more than 150 university researchers and 60 bioscience startup companies. And most importantly, we've stopped and listened and responded with programs to help these companies succeed. So what did we hear and how are we responding? We heard they need specialized mentoring, and we responded by creating the state's first and only bio-mentoring network. This is about 100 professionals who are willing to donate time pro bono to help any bioscience entrepreneur across the state, so mostly lawyers, accountants, investors, CEOs, and key business professionals. We heard they need specialized bioscience incubation space and infrastructure and access to shared equipment to help create their products and grow their companies. Startup companies need to use their very limited capital to hire employees and to produce research that will launch their products. And these businesses are often very limited by capital. They can't immediately afford to spend resources on building out and equipping wet labs and offices. This is why incubation is a necessity for helping these companies grow. In 2013, OTRADI responded to these specific needs by building out, equipping, and opening Oregon's first and only bioscience focused startup incubator, the OTRADI Bioscience Incubator. The OBI was launched with a full roster of 6 bioscience companies, and in response to an overwhelming and increasing demand, and with the help of Governor's Strategic Reserve funding, less than 2 years after we opened, we expanded the OBI, and we are now home to 17 startup companies, our most recent joining last month. Now, I may be biased, but I believe that the OBI holds the state's most promising cutting-edge startup companies. Our 17 startups are focused on creating innovative and life-changing new medical devices, diagnostic technologies, therapeutics, digital health, and health IT products. Please let me take a moment to brag on their behalf. This biennium alone, the state's $2 million investment in OTRADI and the OBI has allowed our startups to raise $13 million in SBIR federal funding and more than $30 million in private and venture capital funding. Our startup companies have 96 jobs just within the walls of our incubator alone. Our first startup company graduated in December after raising more than $5 million in venture capital funding. In short, the state's investment into the OBI and the bio startups we're incubating has provided a 20-to-1 return on investment this biennium alone, and we're just getting started. Our most recent success story involves an OHSU spinoff company that lives at the OBI. Semegavax is a bio startup that's developing an incredibly promising HIV vaccine. Their technology holds promise not only for infectious disease, but also for cancer treatment. so much so that they recently won a coveted investment from one of the world's leading VC firms. These venture capitals folks pledged up to $150 million to bring these technologies to market. I'm proud to say that Temegavax's inclusion and participation in the community of startups at the OVI and the excellent entrepreneurial resources provided there were cited by the VCs as reasons allowing the research and development team to remain here in Oregon instead of moving the company and key personnel to the Bay Area where the fund is located. They've also doubled the space that they have in our incubator in recent months. So what are we promising to do this next biennium? We are going to focus on growing areas where Oregon has unique advantages, such as the emerging fields of digital health, mobile health, health IT, and wearables biosensors. Our biomentoring programs are uniquely suited to help these emerging startups find partners and capital investment. We're also continuing to expand our biomentoring network to reach outside of cities and university towns to include rural and underserved areas. Our partnerships with organizations in the past, such as Fertilab Eugene, Rain and Corvallis and Eugene, Bend Bio and OSU Cascades and Bend, and the Sustainable Valley Technology Group in Medford, have allowed us to create a virtual support system and biomentoring network that reaches all corners of the state. And by bringing our biomentoring program virtual with video conferencing and metrics, we're going to be able to push this and allow companies to succeed in their own hometowns. The OBI is committed to listening to the evolving needs of our bioscience community and to being an integral part of our growing ecosystem here in Oregon. Thank you for being partners in the exciting days to come.
Thank you. Colleagues, any questions of Dr. Fox? As this panel leaves and Ms. Rodemaker comes forward, I just would like to say that under Dr. Fox's leadership, when they built this biotech center, there was some question about whether or not it could be filled, and it was in such short order. And I think it's safe to say, your colleagues are there with you, they can contradict me if I'm wrong, that Otrati has the greatest amount of earned revenue right now from your entrepreneurial efforts with leasing space and shared labs. And is that still true?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you very much. Questions? Representative Rudin.
Oh, just a comment, if I may, or a question for Mr. Kenny. Do you still have the Best Fest?
Absolutely. Yes, that'll be September 14th this year.
Okay, great. I hope I get an invitation.
You will.
Thank you.
You are
thank
all
you.
Invited every year.
Thank you very much. We'll ask Ms. Rodemaker to come forward and discuss the Secretary of State audit. Thank you very much for your presentations and your time.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Ramona Rodemaker. I'm the Assistant Director for Operations and Finance for Business Oregon. Chair Johnson, Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, I've been asked today to speak to you about the overall findings from the Secretary of State's performance audit that on Business Oregon that was completed in December of 2016. The topics that were covered in this audit, there were three of them primarily. First, they covered basically our strategic reserve fund and what its selection and loan modification procedures were. The second topic that was covered was evaluation of our incentive programs, our business finance programs, tax abatement, and loan guarantee programs. And so four different types of programs that are in economic development. And then lastly, the third topic that was covered was transparency of business incentive and loan results. To begin, I'd like to highlight four of the overarching findings that came directly from the report from the Secretary of State. And these are fairly positive findings. Business Oregon programs added new jobs, and workers filling those jobs generated positive returns to the state through income tax payments. Second, Oregon has recently made a number of improvements in reporting awards to individual businesses, putting it near the top in state rankings in improving public accountability. This is largely through the work Oregon's done on transparency and evaluation.
Third, Business Oregon has developed new, more thorough processes for making strategic reserve fund awards. And last, Business Oregon is in compliance with all current laws and regulations. We appreciate the recognition of the work that we've done thus far, and we remain committed to continuous improvement. We're going to work to build on these positive results and to continue to refine our processes and try and implement many of the recommendations from the Secretary of State's report. To summarize our management response, I want to focus on the actions we've already taken to implement the Secretary of State's recommendations. In 2015, Business Oregon contracted with its own internal auditing group to identify ways to strengthen our strategic reserve fund management process. And by that, I include our decision-making process, our contracting process, as well as our monitoring process. And the Secretary of State audit echoed much of what we learned from that audit that we commissioned and that we had already begun work to implement and to improve. Some of the things that we've done already is we have worked to improve the Strategic Reserve Fund decision-making, contracting, and monitoring controls. And define the workflows more thoroughly than we had in the past. Specifically, as a result of the Secretary of State audit, we have begun to take the following actions. We are now including our referral source and the financial review that our business finance section does in the memos that we present to the governor before she approves an award. We have always...
Let me stop you there. When you say your referral source, I know that there are a variety of people who refer into the Strategic Reserve Program. Some of it is regional solutions. Some of it is your own folks in the field. Who else are referral sources?
Senator Johnson, referral sources can come from a lot of different places. They can come from, local boards of commissioners. They can be other economic development professionals. They can be legislators. The governor herself may have an interest. And while we've always captured this information and kept it in our working files, what they were recommending is that we identify a single source. We had discussions with them along the way and told them exactly what you're saying, is that a lot of times there are multiple places where the interest in particular projects are coming from. And so our commitment is to identify those and keep that information in the file and make sure that it's disclosable.
Thank you. The point that I wanted to make was that you aren't generating these by yourself. You have incoming from a lot of places.
That's correct. Some of them do come from our own staff, but a lot of times they come from external sources. And we have also always discussed our financial review processes with the governor and her staff, but now we provide the original documentation so that they can look at that analysis themselves. Second, one of the things that we've changed about our strategic reserve fund process is we were asked by the Secretary of State to identify all state investments that went into a particular project and to try and incorporate that into the return on investment calculation. That's another one where, depending on the complexity of the process and how many different things are going on at once, it can either be very simple to complex. What we've done is we've modified our intake form to capture other state investments. So we specifically ask that when somebody wants to participate in negotiations with us about becoming a strategic reserve fund project. And then we are looking at including the projects that have a jobs creation focus in that return on investment. Depending on what the project is, they can have all kinds of other goals as well. I mean, they could be doing road improvements at the same time, and that probably is not an appropriate way to calculate that return on investment calculation.
Do you do any level of review prior to an award to make sure that the recipient is current with their obligations to the state of Oregon, that they've paid their taxes, that they have no outstanding liens, that they do you do any of that level of due diligence?
We do a thorough business finance review and take a look at their entire financial picture. And then before we actually contract, it's one of the requirements that we ask that question of the actual applicant and do that due diligence. So so that is something that we take a look at.
Thank you.
And then we also began to identify the in addition to modifying the intake form, the audit asked us to identify the conditions under which we would do a loan modification for a specific strategic reserve fund. Strategic reserve fund are forgivable loans, and so that have job creation goals. And if they're able to create and maintain the jobs that they project, then the loan oftentimes gets forgiven. If they're not able to maintain those jobs, there are clawback provisions, and we ask for loan repayment. And so one of the things that they questioned us was just because we work with each individual business based on what the circumstances are going on at that time, our intent is still to create those jobs and also to not create an adversarial sort of environment for the business. We work to try and make that loan successful, and sometimes that is a unique process. But now, as part of the process, we're working with them to identify specific contract conditions and terms under which we would modify loans. We also have a multidisciplinary team that is meeting to make sure that we're doing that in a consistent manner. When you get to the evaluation section of the audit, in late 2016, Business Oregon began a strategic planning process aimed at focusing our planning process in defining our mission, vision, and values so that they can drive our program decisions. It's our intent that we use this strategic planning process to help identify metrics, targets, and outcomes for each and every one of our programs that we run. And so we have engaged in this process. We're finished with phase one of the strategic planning and now are about to engage in the process where we work with the individual programs to identify their work plans and outcomes. These programs have existing outcomes. We're just going to work to refine and make sure that they're the right ones. Next, we plan to continue to work in partnership with the other state agencies to assist in the evaluation of the economic development programs that are located in other state agencies. That was a recommendation of the audit. We currently work with local tax assessors, boards of county commissioners, the Department of Revenue, Legislative Revenue Office, and others to aid in this effort, and we'll continue to do so. On the transparency front, to our knowledge, we have always been in compliance with all of the state's transparency statutes and regulations. But in October 2016, we took the initiative to work with the DAS Transparency Office to establish a link on their site to our agency-specific outcome measures. That we also have placed a reciprocal link on our website to direct our customers to the transparency website. We see this as a first step in managing our own data sets, uploading real-time data, and ultimately providing the kind of program-specific outcome information that our customers want, and we can make it more easily available to them. Since this audit was only completed 3 months ago, we believe we've made significant progress towards implementing these recommendations. There are a few areas in the audit where that will likely prove to be a bit more challenging. So on the flip side, some of the areas that we received recommendations for that we're exploring how we might comply, but right now we have some challenges to that. The report asked us to establish job creation targets for 15 programs referenced in the report. That's problematic for us because only 9 of the programs are Business Oregon programs, and then only 4 of those programs actually have job creation targets. As I started out by saying, this audit covered incentive programs, traditional business finance programs, which are bank loan type instruments, loan guarantees, and also tax abatement and enterprise zones. And so it's hard to establish job creation activities for all of those, particularly when some of those programs are not ours and they're designed to fulfill different purposes. Another recommendation that
I just go back and ask you, are you finding the Secretary of State's office amenable to working with you? You can't be held responsible for programs that aren't yours.
When we spoke to them, one of the things that we discussed with them is that this seemed like a really good audit of the economic development system in Oregon, but some of the recommendations didn't seem directly applicable or actionable by our agency. Not that we don't want to work in partnership to get this stuff done. We absolutely do. We know we have expertise and are willing to be good partners. But right now, some of the authority or the responsibility for the recommendations actually reside in statute with other agencies. And so that's problematic for us in that we don't want to step in front of them. And also, sometimes the staffing to get these tasks done reside in other places. I'll give you an example. They asked us to perform sunset reviews and ensure the accuracy of enterprise zone reports. Well, by statute, enterprise zones are very decentralized in Oregon. Boards of county commissioners are the ones who want to create those and move those forwards. Local tax assessors manage them. The forms and reports are created by the Department of Revenue. We have a role up front in establishing that the enterprise zones meet legal criteria, and then the sunset reviews are actually performed by the Legislative Revenue Office. And so asking us to ensure the accuracy of it is really taking one partner out of all of that and imposing that responsibility on us, when in fact right now, the way it's done is we do work in partnership, but the responsibility for receiving and evaluating those reports is really much more directly in the hands of the Department of Revenue. So
I'm going to take that as a yes.
Yes. So,
Co-Chair Gumberg, please.
Thank you, Co-Chair, and I apologize for interrupting your presentation. I'm finding this really very illuminating. But I'm trying to understand one element of this. If the Oregon House stays on schedule, on Monday we'll be voting on House Bill 3377. 3377 directs you folks to prepare a plan and strategies for implementing the recommendations of this audit, as I understand it. How is that different than what you're doing for us here today?
Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, we have a working audit plan already, and we've shared that with the originators of that bill. And I think that what that bill is asking for is for us to come and present in 2018 on what has occurred as a result of the plan that we have, and to talk about what's different than today. And so there are definitely things that we need to continue to work on and that we have had an agency goal already of working on. And so we'll be able to really show some significant progress on our program specific outcomes, for example. Some of the other things are going to be much more of a collaborative approach and trying to work with those other state partners to see what assistance they require of us. We have a long history and tradition of stepping forward and working with those partners already, and I think this is just indicating to us that they'd like to see us figure out what the next steps are and where we go next.
Right, thank you. Follow-up?
Follow-up, please.
This is a money committee. What recommendations that you're talking about addressing here might end up either costing more or less money as we go forward?
Co-Chair Gomberg, I'm not sure I understand the question. What do you mean exactly?
The audit is suggesting a number of steps, and the legislation that we're going to be voting on again on likely on Monday is asking you to report back on a plan and strategy for implementing those steps. I'm just asking if any of those steps are going to either save us money or cost us more money.
Co-Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, we don't have a fiscal impact on that bill. This is work we were going to do anyway. We take these audit results very seriously, and we have an internal audit committee that sits down and prepares plan in response to Secretary of State as well as our own internal audit reports. And so we sort of work these issues on an ongoing basis anyway. And from what my understanding and reading of that bill is that you're asking us to come back and report on what progress we've made. That should not have a fiscal impact. And some of the recommendations that are in there, like I said, we'll be able to make some significant progress on. And others, we will probably, unless something changes on a policy basis, we'll likely have some of the same challenges in 2018 that we have now. And that kind of leads me to one of my last points, was just the last two bullets on this slide are that they would like to see more recipient level job data, and they'd also like us to work with the legislature to remove disclosure requirements. That would require some significant law changes, in that there are three distinct state laws that would prevent us from disclosing some of this information now, as well as one federal law. And so we can explore what that means, but the reality is that in the current framework, if we want to continue to use real-time job data, which is what we use here in Oregon, then we're not going to be able to report company-specific information on how many jobs were created. The reason for that is it will violate our interagency agreement with the Oregon Employment Department, and it specifically violates ORS 192.502, which says that we're not able to share financial statements, tax info, or other information that could reveal a company's financial status. So, I'm not in any way trying to be obstructive here. We want to do as much as we can, but the way we measure information and the way we actually track our key performance measures, which do include number of jobs created and retained, as well as the tax income that is generated, and we're able to report that in aggregate. What we're not able to do is report it on an individual loan basis, and if we do that, that jeopardizes the access we have to our data where we report key performance measures.
And I presume you'll incorporate that in your report back, assuming that the legislation 3377 passes.
Okay. Absolutely.
We'd ask you to sprint to the finish.
Okay. So basically, that concludes the main points.
Oh, lovely.
That was quite a sprint.
Cool. Any questions from Ms. Rodemaker? Okay. There being none, Mr. Bender.
Tomorrow, you're scheduled for the second day of phase two from OBDD, which will focus on the Regional Solutions Program and a request to reallocate some already issued bond proceeds.
Thank you. Colleagues, anything for the good of the order? On behalf of the committee, thank you for taking your time and your presentations. We're adjourned.